Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, you know that is, that's Chuck D, a little remake of Welcome to the Terror Dome from a couple of years ago, but it's just as appropriate now or days that we're dealing with the madness, the craziness that we're dealing with this current individual in the White House. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. I'm Kay's son and my friends, Byron Saunders, Wayne Gilman, Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders, the newsman, the historian, the brothers. So we pushed last night if you were looking for us to be live last night, so we're going to try to jump in tonight for just about 45 minutes because we know that, we want to watch a debate, hoping that you guys, whoever's listening to this, if you're listening live, is going to check out the debate. There's nothing like seeing how people react. There's, you know, me being a person who's a media head, someone who's into media and live entertainment and acting in the arts and all of that, there's nothing like watching someone, seeing someone live. You get so many clues and ideas and so much from just watching people be and, you know, watching how they react, watching how they react in unscripted, untelevised, unknowing that they're unposable, you know, times when people don't know they're on camera. That's the best time to see, and it's the little things to me. What I noticed growing up in an environment of people who were civil rights activists, wanted to be public servants for either their own calling inside or because of the opportunities. You know, you could always tell who's genuine in life, period, but certainly in those type of settings. You can really, if you pay attention, you can understand who's genuine by the small things that they do, their small reactions. I think that that's prevalent in any situation, scenario, body language, watching people, how they react, tells you a lot. And certainly myself as an actor, it's something that I found quite helpful in, you know, understanding people, how they react and what makes them tick and all those type of things, studying human behavior, the study of psychology and things like that to a very small degree. And in watching those actions, that's why even though I don't really like watching Trump and those rallies that he has, I always find it interesting to watch him and to see what he really says and to watch what he really says because, you know, the news and edited format when someone telling you what happened is never going to give you the same impression that you would have seeing things live. And so it's always good to check out the rallies and the press conferences and just to see how these people really truly react and interact with other people. That tells you a great deal with someone like Trump. I mean, you know, he kind of stands from the mountaintop and lets everybody know where he's coming from, but it's also those little things. And I think that paying attention to someone's actions is probably not a lot more valuable than to listening to their words, particularly when their words don't line up with their actions. And a couple of things that I wanted to talk about briefly. Wayne brought it up last week, week before last, talking about, you know, the issue with Ice Cube talking to Donald Trump and discussing his plan. And from my perspective, you know, when someone says, you know, you've got this whole frustration thing with the black male vote, as of recently, the latest news story that's been circulating the last couple of days, or this week's news cycle, or certainly the last couple of days' news cycle, is that the Democratic Party is reaching out to black male voters. And to me, just when black people, period, are going to vote for the Republicans is kind of bizarre to me. But just not voting, not getting involved, and thinking the two are the same is really extremely bizarre. I mean, it's hedging your bets, fellas, brothers. It's called hedging your bets, you know. I mean, all of the system, from our perspective, the system, the entire system is rigged. But you want to go with the devil you know, or the devil that's going to work with you the best, as opposed to the other one, if you have to put it that way, if you have to look at it that way. And we've said that before. And so when I hear some people talk about, well, let's hear what Trump's got to say, some people being Republicans, or someone like Ice Cube has got a platform, and he says he's talking to whoever is going to help him with his program and his mission to help his people. Great. Fine. That's a great perspective. You know, that's the perspective that a lot of these African-Americans went and sat down with Trump and wanted to at least talk to him and that whole thing. But there's a couple of things to consider in that school of thought, right, from my perspective. If you sit down with someone that you know has said all these despicable things, and or maybe you don't know that, maybe you're one of, that doesn't pay attention to all of the hearsay until you meet someone, right? But you certainly know from some reputable sources, if you've heard it yourself, them say some pretty despicable things that as it relates to you and the demographic or the ethnic group that you're from. And so being a Machiavellian kind of, you know, the means justify the ends, going to put up with all of this, and just as long as I get a deal with him, and going to play spooky sad by the door, or whatever means that you want to sit down with this guy and say, I have a plan for black America, what are you going to do? Let's sit down, point blank. When the individual has already demonstrated that they cannot be trusted, then I don't understand why you would assume that what they're telling you at a time of desperation, pretty much, to get the black vote, would be valid. That's the first thing. Why he would think that sitting down, and it's great just to sit down, but why you would even think that based on the track record of that individual, things that you can verify, why you would even think that they would, that you could trust them and take them at their word. That's one. And two, well, I guess two doesn't really, you know, there's another point I want to put in there after that one. An addendum to that point is we're at a time in the world now where you don't have to deal with certain individuals, meaning that that's not the only game in town. He may be president, but there's also value, and Ice Cube did say he reached out to Biden's people, and they said after the election. So, but in saying that, that person is not the only game in town, so you don't have to deal with them and put up with the bullshit that you'd have to put up with in achieving your goal, right? You don't have to put up with the racism, because I'm going to get $1 billion worth of business from this guy, when there's a scenario where you can get $1 billion worth of business from someone who's not a racist, right? So, A, you don't have to put up with that anymore. It's not the only game in town mentality like it used to be. And B, and I guess the final point would be, how would you really feel? Are you really someone who could stomach that? Are you really the person type of person to say, yeah, I could put up with all this stuff just as long as I'm getting paid? And I suppose that's a way to look at it, but how are you going to feel about yourself and about your people? How are they going to look at you? Especially if you take the perspective, like, just as long as I'm getting paid, I'm going to put up with it. Because then it has a potential to become just about you. You become selfish about your own personal means and the overall good that you're trying to do in this particular case is help a race of people is lost. So I don't think any of those scenarios are win scenarios when Cube is talking about sitting down and telling Trump his idea, the whole scenario of I'll sit down and talk to anybody, because A, like I said, that person is not trustworthy. B, they're probably going to use you so they could say they sat down and talked to you. C, they're not the only game in town, right? It's not like the 1900s where you're going to have to deal with that Mr. Charlie because he's the only one who runs everything. And D, or C, I don't know what letter I'm on, how would you feel? I mean, if you're just looking to enrich yourself personally, maybe that's a strategy that works. But hearing someone be so despicable to your group of people and to other people, how do you feel? And I guess it's an emotional thing about rolling with that one, that type of person, even though you're gonna the payoff is gonna be great, you know. So, did you compromise? I guess I'm saying, did you compromise your values in that type of scenario? Let's bring Wayne in. I just wanted to get that out about that particular route of that some people take. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. But Wayne, you understood what I'm saying, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah,
some people make
you
can make a deal with the devil. I mean, or you can choose not to. But you know, it doesn't mean that the devil's going to honor his deal, which is usually never happens.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, it's the timing. It's the atmosphere that we're in now. You know, Ice Cube is not in a vacuum, and people like Shalimar, the guard, you know, he's another one that's, you know, said, he's publicly said he's not voting for Biden, but he will support Harris. You know, I mean, they're saying all these things, and I don't know if Cube has had a response. I know since he's been outed, he's been somewhat contrite, and there have been people who've come to his aid. Like, I think Killer Mike sort of supported what he was attempting to do, but everything is predicated on time. We've had 4 years to analyze the genuine characteristics, if there are any, in Donald Trump. And from what I see, he doesn't hold our best interest at all, unless it's something that would elevate his presence or divide the vote, because he knows that the Democratic Party has been a stronghold for black voters for the last 60-some-odd years. But I don't even think Trump understands the history as to what led to all that. And he could care less, you know. The fact that he went out and he used a bunch of people who, and I don't mean to minimize, I'm saying a bunch, but, you know, I'm just so frustrated when I see our folks being used for political expediency just to uphold and elevate the profile of someone who does not deserve a second term. I'm glad that he had the presence of mind to listen to Kim Kardashian and her husband to have these prisoners released. You know, it's exemplary on his part to actually have a notion in his mind, but there was always a payoff with that. And I'm certain that he was advised it was politically expedient for him to do this, because there'll come a time, you know, during the Republican National Convention that he could parade, forgive me for saying this, his Negroes to show that, hey, you know, we're not divisive. We've done more for black people, because that's all he ever says, you know, regardless of if you can account for it or not. All right, you threw a couple of dollars to the HBCUs. You've done this, you've done that. But, you know, when you look at the overall picture, when you look at the atmosphere that we're in, when you turn around and you say things that's going to incite violence, that keeps us polarized, you know, you have no plan, but all you do is just sit up there like as if you're the white version, and I shouldn't even use Eddie Murphy as an example, but a white comedian who at every rally is saying this and saying that. And, you know, he reminds me of the guy he passed a couple of years ago, I think Don Rickles, always insulting someone, you know. That was his stick. But, you know, you're the president of the United States. You are the leader of the free world. People look at you to project an image that has been ingrained in our history for so long. I still maintain, you know, if Ice Cube wanted to get in with him to come up with his plan, he should have done that at the beginning, like when Steve Harvey and Jim Brown and a few other black folk, you know, were trying to do something to get in with the administration, because they figured, they knew from high on up and his and hearing what other people have had to say about him, that maybe, you know, maybe we could do something to work with this guy. But at, you know, we're in the 11th hour now. I mean, it's we're
yeah,
just a week away from, you know, what this country should be doing, and 42 million people have already voted. That's never happened before, you know, in you know, this early in a presidential campaign. And
yeah, well,
there have been a lot. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, let's just get Byron in. He's just calling in late, since we're only going another half hour. Hey, Byron Saunders, how you doing, brother? We were just.
Blessed.
Go ahead, Byron.
Just blessed and highly favored down here in the cesspool. You know, as you know, you and Wayne know, I've got a Playbill live
yeah.
performance tomorrow. At 8:45 p.m. And this is what's interesting, Eric, because you and I are in the entertainment industry. And with all the stuff that's going on, you know that Broadway is shut down. Hollywood is shut down. And so how do we continue our work in this industry through all the pandemic? Well, Playbill has a competition called Virtual Theater Festival. And out of 150 applications from across the country, they selected 12 for the final competition. A piece that I'm doing called Simon Says is one of 12. I'm the only minority producer, and it's only a 10-minute production. And the wonderful thing about it, the judges are from the Schubert Organization. Eric and Wayne, how do we get our theater and our movie industry back on the boards again? This is an opportunity. Gold Star and live streaming is interested in live streaming entertainment productions. That's what Hamilton was, pretty much a live streaming production. But this is different in that that was taped four different times. This is now a live streaming Zoom type of production. And they've given us access to rehearsal space, virtual rehearsal space, our own little space, and given us access to technology that normally would cost thousands of dollars. But the notion is, how do we assist our industry to get back on its feet? And the competition is real, and it's like $3,000 on the table, $1,500 for the fan favorite and $1,500 for the judge's favorite. But to be selected one of 12, and I'm the only minority producer out of the 12. So I really feel blessed to get an opportunity to showcase what we do in the industry and how we grow. How are we going to make this industry grow in the midst of everything else going on?
Yeah, that's
the debate tonight. We've got the, you know, we've got all hell breaking out with over 220-some thousand people dead. We got 40 million people who have already voted, and I think after the debate tonight, if you don't have any idea who you're going to vote for, just turn off the TV and just pray on it.
Yeah, you,
because
you know what we're talking about. What we're talking about was actually as Ice Cube and some of the black folk, Ice Cube being an entertainer as well, in talking to Trump. And you know, part of what people have to weigh. I was talking about how people should weigh, you know, what the potential is in deciding, you know, when you're deciding who you're going to be down with, which team you're going to choose, you got to weigh out whether you're really going to achieve your objective. And we talk about Ice Cube talking to Trump, saying he'll talk to anybody. Biden's campaign talked to him after. And it's just whether you trust the source, you know, and there is no one source to have to go to nowadays anymore, certainly. And what I want to move us to as we get off this whole thing about of the last week, black men having to be courted to vote for Joe Biden, and why it seems that way. I think that that's probably less of an issue than people are making it. But, you know, the fact that Brothers didn't come out for Hillary, there's probably a whole other bunch of circumstances in there that caused that. But also the fact that we need to realize what's the best route for us to take, and understanding, you know, what's going to be best for us.
But you know, the thing that I found rather disturbing with Ice Cube, and I call him Crushed Ice now, and 50 Cent, is that, you know, I was out in Compton last year. And with all due respect to Ice Cube, and I understand he's trying to curry political favor, but my God, if you're going to be a robber baron, take the money and go back and clean up Compton, because it's the same way it was when they did the Boys in the Hood. I mean, it's like, really, don't need a president and an administration that hasn't done anything for us to be able to clean up your own backyard. We don't need that. We've always had an opportunity to take our resources. That's what churches do. But really, then to step into a GOP snake pit and then try to convince us that this is the way to go? No, Ice Cube. 50 Cent, you standing in front of your gold-plated Rolls Royce, all you're saying to me is that you're one of them. You're not. I imagine you're mistreating your employees the same way he mistreats his. So what is that? What are we doing? Can you take the Nick out of the neighborhood, or is the Nick still the Nick when he's gone back into the hood? You know, the notion is, listen, guys, we do need your help. Professional sports players, we do need your help. But this is not the way to do it. You know what? All this time you're putting your money up and flashing and going to a magic club down there in Atlanta, throwing thousands of dollars at strippers. And in the meantime, right behind the club is a poverty zone called Capitol Hill, right there in Atlanta, Georgia. And none of that money is going over there to help support and sustain what's basically Section 8 Rico Block City. So what are we doing? I'm upset with that. I'm upset with the fact that Shaq O'Neal has never voted. He's 48 years old, never voted.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Come on, guys.
Yeah,
I mean, we want to respect you, but you can't. You're not respecting us. And then you're going to side off with somebody who's really engaged in eugenics and genocide. That's what it is. And I heard it for the first time yesterday from a Boston Globe reporter referring to what the insanity of the 223,000 people dead right now as manslaughter. Come on. You really want to back somebody who is guilty of manslaughter, has been impeached, owes $400 million to foreign governments? You can't be trusted to sell anything. Now you're going to sign up with somebody like that? I can't trust you, 50 Cent. I can't trust Ice Cube. Come on.
Part of the problem is understanding. I think that, like Wayne brought up, the fact that, you know, there was 4 years to try and initiate some sort of, like some other people that went and met with Trump in the beginning when he first got elected. And that's almost, and even the people who voted for him, that's almost beyond the blacks. That's almost more understandable because you didn't know what you were going to get. But now 4 years later, you knew what you're – we have an example of what we got. And where is the – why is the benefit of the doubt given thinking that it's going to change? A.
Right.
And B, why wait till now to get involved? I mean, that was a really good point, Wayne, because if you look at someone – and also combining your point, Byron, look at someone like LeBron – who 3 or 4 years ago started his academy, the school, Killer Mike has been doing things, structural things outside of politics that where we really need that work done, building our economic base in the black communities, having all these new black millionaires and billionaires that are coming to us via entertainment and sports be educated about how, like Killer Mike is doing, you could go into a community and open a bank. You know, and have those funds available for the black residents of that community to take advantage of that economic power and wealth. So, you know, it's a little bit, I guess everything is timing, right? Wayne, you said the timing a little earlier. You know, why choose to get involved in Charlemagne and all these people? Why choose now? Is it because the subject is hottest now and there's a certain kind of media attention that it gets you talking about it now as opposed to talking about it since the beginning, you know? So,
I agree.
You know, people have a lot of vested interests.
And one thing that really gets to me, I was watching an interview, a short interview, I'm sorry, Byron, on MSNBC earlier today. They had about four black women, young women, women I would say in their early 20s, who watched the first debate. And these women grade debates on, I guess, the scoring card is predicated on how well you can defeat your opponent talking a lot of crap. Now, I mean, at the end of the day, what Trump did during that first debate was try to out-talk his challenger. But the fact of the matter is, everything that he came up with made no sense, but in the eyes of these young black women, felt that Biden was weak because he didn't take on or he acted intolerant. And I'm just saying, you know, if this is the demographic that needs to be brought across the water to understand what's really at stake, this is not a boxing match. You know, this is reality, as Obama said the other day. This is not a reality show. You know?
That's right, about the education level of the voter. That's why people have to be educated and know what they're watching and know, you know.
But these are the same characteristics
who are hooked on Housewives of Atlanta, Housewives of New Jersey, Housewives of the Doctors, That's not real, people. You want WWE SmackDown? Turn on Fox News. Turn on Channel 17 and watch TBS, because that's play. Virtual is not real. That's what they're looking for. And when I see Keeping Up with the Kardashians, I don't care what they're doing. That's not real. You can't even get into the Kardashian backyard with that crap. So wake up, smell the real stuff that you're standing in, because for 4 years, this administration has not had a peeping word with the black and Latino caucuses from the Congress and the Senate. What does that tell you? They sit down in a room with a prayer meeting with some handkerchief head pastors sit there with their hands on his shoulders having a prayer meeting while he's sitting there with a Bible upside down and literally is not a Christian. And at what point do you not understand we are in hell right now? And nobody out of this administration has lifted a mumbling finger. One in five deaths out of 224,000 people is a person of color.
Yeah.
Get up.
So it might be the fact that we are, in fact, in the minority of people who pay attention to such things and people who understand really what's at stake. The whole reason why, you know, you got the talking heads on TV, just the same reason why you got the commentators in sports, to tell you and break down the game for you so you can have an understanding of the game. And we're at a point in America where the average American, the average citizen, is not very astute in the issues, not very astute in politics. And so when they see these debates, these people aren't coming from watching the news or paying attention to the daily news and the intricate keys and the details about the news. They're coming to the debates and watching them, and, okay, they know they should pay attention. And not really, you know, that's why they're not really listening. That's why the bluster and the trash talking overshadows the actual facts and someone making sense, you know. People, the average person doesn't realize when they're talking about the deficit, you know, Byron, you talk about the deficit a lot in the country. The average person doesn't realize the mathematics and the structure of our government and how the government must allocate funds for projects. The average person doesn't even realize all of that. All they know is, oh, I just wanted to get done, boom. And they don't understand.
But I tell you one thing, Eric. Let me just finish real quick.
This is why Democrats are just now becoming versed in the importance of midterm elections, right? We're just now starting to realize that. I blame the party to a certain degree in not educating the people. You were going to say, Wayne.
No, I'm in agreement with you, but the thing is, the average American person, regardless of your ethnic background, race, whatever, they understand pain, and we're going through
right.
some real painful times. I mean, to me, to support someone that has been basically the champion of all this destruction, chaos, and pain makes no sense to me at all. It is the most maniacal, sophomoric behavior I've ever seen in my lifetime. I remember at the height of the pandemic here in New York, going back to April, how people were just dying in the streets. These four black girls that were on MSNBC talking about Biden should, you know, act more, you know, combative with Trump. You know, if they had witnessed what I saw and lost friends, I just found out that Minister Kevin Muhammad, Temple Number 7, I didn't realize he was gone. He was among those who lost his life. You know, it just goes on and on. I was in Manhattan yesterday trying to get some legal documents. It's still a ghost town. Lower Manhattan, people are driving in. They don't want to be on the trains. And all these things, it's going to take more than a year, even if we have a change in administration. It's going to take a minute to get things back to how they should be. You know, you mentioned your event tomorrow night, Byron. I happened to host an event a couple of weeks ago, a virtual event, and I wasn't familiar with this organization, the Black Arts Theater in Queens. And they're doing streaming now because, you know, the culture is lost. You know, these people who are out here, you know, they're like the first responders. They need the financial assistance that everybody should be getting at this point. While, you know, Moscow Mitch and what's his name working, the only one that is sitting down representing the president's interests, the secretary, Mnuchin, you know, those two need to get it together and bypass. This man's talking about he wants to put out more money than what Pelosi's putting out. Fine, you know, let your money meet where your mouth is right now and do that and talk to your cutthroat buddies in Kentucky and other parts of the country who are just waiting to see what happens in the election. I mean, it would be in his – if he wants to turn his numbers around, it would be in his best interest if he had given out this second stimulus package and not even question, you know, because it is documented evidence that the first one has kept the economy alive to a certain extent. But people are suffering, and I go back to my initial point. The average American may be in a vacuum about how the political process works, but we all understand pain.
That's right.
Right. And then what's necessary is to understand how you end up in that pain, and that's the whole thing. When the average people hear that there's not a deal struck and everybody, you know, you're not going to get your check, and because that's an actionable thing. That's a cause and effect, right? Congress passed the stimulus. People got checks to help through. They saw checks in the mail. And so all they know is that they're not going to pass it again, and it's being held up by Nancy or whoever. But the average person doesn't understand, well, Mitch is holding it up, and it requires this, this, and this, right? They just know that it's being held up. Okay, now they might hear, if they're paying attention a little bit, it's Mitch McConnell's holding it up. And he might say, "Well, it's," and they might say, "Well, it's Nancy Pelosi's fault holding it up." But they don't really. They just know. And after a minute, you know, these average people, they just get frustrated and say, "Ah, they're all full of it. Just get it together." And that's what I'm talking about: the lack of understanding of the details, why it might be held up, or the maneuvers. That's when the people that are in the positions of power are playing politics. Right, and for the person that is it's affecting, you got to understand which one of those people is playing the politics affecting my life. Just like black voters need to understand. Oh, well, nothing's really changed for us, you know. With doesn't matter who's in office. No, that's not really true, because if you're paying attention, You might be hearing Trump talk, but if you pay attention and understand that he's cutting out the sensitivity training for all of these organizations that could help you in positions, or that his rhetoric is one that is giving white supremacists and people who would be more apt to commit acts of violence against black people the go-ahead, meaning some of these cops and other people, then, you know, you understand the direct cause and effect. But if you're someone like a wealthy person who happens to be of color, where you don't have to deal with that on a daily basis and it doesn't really affect you, then it's a little bit farther removed. And even though brothers and sisters are getting shot, it ain't happening to me. So I can't really see the direct line between George Floyd getting shot and Donald Trump's words. Right? I can see a whole bunch of stuff between Donald Trump's words and George Floyd getting shot, and I'm not going to get shot because I'm so-and-so, I'm this, I'm that. And also, I could probably get a minute to sit down with Donald Trump and tell him what I think and have him listen to me.
And then they think
that's something that's going to happen and affect some sort of change when there hasn't been any evidence of that up until that point. You're going to say?
Well, see what Trump has done, and he's done this for 4 years. He's cherry-picked his Negroes, okay? And ultimately, that's not representative of the folks who we put in the office to sit at the table of power, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me twisted on this, y'all. I love NWA. I like 50 Cent. But you're not an elected official. Your interests are self-motivated. That's the same thing as his interest. It's narcissistic. If there's a pandemic of narcissism that's going on, it's because you think wealth has brought you into the club. Well, guess what? You're still a nigga. You don't go to Mar-a-Lago.
That's right.
You don't get invited to these other major clubs that it costs $250,000 to get in just to say hello. That's not your M.O. So why are you even ponying up and trying to pick his boogers when you are still just a Negro? Get off of it. Understand the difference, because at the end of the day, you haven't done a damn thing to help Compton get back on its feet.
Well, I think that also, too, it's also like I kind of those brothers are thinking that they're doing the right thing, or they're making some sort of moves or whatever is on their mind. Slightly different than the black Republican. There's a guy running in Michigan, and I said the Obama Republic, black Republican. Because this guy is ex-Marine, ex-military guy. He's running against the Democrat in Michigan for Senate.
Right.
They're looking good. Right. Everything looks good on paper, just like, I guess, Daniel Cameron. You know, these individuals are very educated. You know, they come from the background. They've got the pedigree, served in the armed forces. All of the necessary kind of traditional pedigree to then go into public service and elected office and run for elected office. And this is where a lot of, you know, these people I would suppose that are black Republicans come into the mix. They fit all of those. They check all those boxes that you would think would be welcome in the kind of that would be welcome as a candidate or an elected official, except for the thing that they're still working to be part of a system that is basically flawed or against the ethnic group that they come from. And the fact that I guess that enough of these individuals think if they're in the, you know, enough black people think if they join the Republican Party, then, you know, we're not going to have racism because they're going to see that we're just normal. I guess that integration makes everything better. But how can that be when systematically the platform and the policies of this party systematically work against the ethnic group that you're a part of, and certainly work against the majority of the ethnic group that you're a part of, because the majority of the ethnic group that you're a part of is in that category that gets most affected by these negative policies and practices. So therefore, to jump in that party and think, oh, I can steer it in this direction or what's worse, that you actually believe in some of these policies and practices that are inherently racist, even though they're disguised within the manner of every American can work their hardest and get ahead, you know, which is a bunch of bullshit, right? Which is what they did to a lot of the brothers coming home from what World War One and World War Two, that were couldn't get the GI loans that a lot of the white service veterans were able to get, right?
Well, you know, something real interesting with the current Supreme Court judge, that's Amy Coney Barrett. Okay, I want y'all to consider this. She says, you know, she's a Catholic, and she says there's no such thing as systemic racism. And then I look at her two Haitian adopted children, and I really, really wonder at what level is she teaching them about their own cultural history? Because
exactly.
It was in 1804 that Toussaint Louverture and Dessalines independence gained from Paris, France's Napoleon, and it was at that time, that very slave revolt, that the United States engaged in systemic racism, creating slave laws, releasing slave catchers. I mean, we went all in. And the embargo that they placed on Haiti lasted from that time till 2020 itself. It's still going on. I'm willing to bet you that those two adopted children have no understanding why Haiti is as poor as it is today. But here's something somebody pointed out to me, and it just clicked, y'all. When she was at that hearing, you pan down where the kids are sitting, and someone said, take a look at her face. Look at her face. Her mask is covering her, this black child's face, and they said, look at her eyes. She looks like she's panicking, says, get me the hell out of here. And then they pointed something out that every black person in America, around the world, will understand. They said, look at her knees. They are ashy. Now, fellas, ashy. Your mother, your mama and my mama and every black person's mama has always said, don't go out in public with some ashy knees. See, they don't even understand the cultural differences.
They don't get it. And she should know better as a white woman anyway. It's not like they're immune, you know.
That's right. And then the other thing, the Pope just blew a hole into the right-wing whole message by accepting LGBTQ and saying they are part of the family of faith. That just blew a hole into the entire Catholic hello of her so-called Christian faith, and would you even have a vote against Roe versus Wade? Come on now, the Pope is your leader. He is the designated descendant of Peter, who Christ himself chose to lead the church. So you're going to go against your Pope? Because he just laid an edict that blew a massive hole into the far-right Christian ethics.
I'd be curious to see what she had to say about that. You know, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you're bringing up points that are so salient, and all the more reason why she should not be given this opportunity, you know, regardless of what goes on, because she fits an agenda. And those two black kids are part of an agenda. As far as I'm concerned, based on what I can see, they're props, and it's unfortunate.
Yes, it's most unfortunate.
Well, you know, it just came out in the news that she was on the board. She was on the board of a school to keep out gay kids who had gay parents.
Wow.
That's right. So all of a sudden, her faith just got tested by the Pope himself. And what's she going to do? That's hypocritical. I mean, she's not qualified.
Hey, Byron, you get the last word, because we got 90 seconds. We talk so quick, and we only did 45 minutes tonight, but we're going to be jetting out. Byron, you want to give the folks your last little words of encouragement before we log off?
Listen to this, my people. Vote. You are seeing 40 million people vote. I'm 70 years old, and in all of the elections I've ever been a part of, a witness to, this many people have never voted before the election date. Pay attention. A blue tsunami is about to blow everything up. Vote, vote, vote.
All right. There it is. Byron Saunders. We'll talk to you again, Brother Byron. All right, brother.
Hello.
Brother Wayne. All right, Brother Wayne.
Hey, man, I just want to echo Byron's sentiments, man. You know, we are in the final leg of this contest, and we've got to step up. And you can't afford to be complacent, and we need to financially support some of these races outside of this tri-state area, like in Georgia.
All right, Wayne.
Right.
We got to go. Wayne Gilman, we'll talk to you again, my brother. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Kay's Son and Friends. Check us again. We'll be back again. Watch this debate. Stay aware, like the brothers are saying. I'm Citizen Payne, Kay's Son and Friends.
I got so much trouble on my mind, refuse to lose.